Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
Hello, hustlers, founders, inventors, and startup enthusiasts. This is your temporary guest host, Ron Shigeta. This is the third out of a fourth-part series exploring Silicon Valley startups, food innovation, tech innovation, and biotech. I run an accelerator called iAccelerate. I've been on the show a couple times, but now I'm guest hosting, and I'm bringing on some of my favorite teams to talk about their experience in sort of the fast lane of food tech and biotech. And consumer tech, which is a really rapidly growing field. In case you don't know me yet, I've been on the guest on the podcast a couple times with Matt DeCourcy. You can sort of find some previous talks on the podcast listing on the webpage. But before I introduce you to today's guest, let's take a quick moment to thank Fullscale for sponsoring today's podcast episode. Go learn how Fullscale helps you build a winning software team quickly and affordably by visiting fullscale.io. Now, let's get to our guest. We are sitting, Startup Hustle is coming to you directly from the world headquarters of Orbillion Bio, a cultured meat company. Sorry, there's different words for it, but a cultured meat company in San Francisco, California. They have offices in Los Angeles and San Francisco. We'll talk about what it's like to run a split startup like that, among other things. I'm sitting here with Sumit Yildirim and Gabriel Tremblay, and they are the CTO and founder and COO of Orbillion. Orbillion was a YC company. Your class was a winter 21. So you guys graduated in January, and it's been kind of a wild ride this year. Right? You just closed funding, was it 8 months ago? When was it done? Eight months.
We had an oversubscribed round and we closed in March of 2021.
Right. And I think that's really, there's a couple of interesting things about this. We're going to talk about what cultured meat is and how this whole idea came about. Do you want to tell us what is it that Orbillion does and what is cultured meat in general?
Yeah, for sure. We just take a small biopsy of an animal and we basically regrow the meat of the animal without the animal. So we don't need to kill the animal.
Meat without the animal.
We just literally grow meat and it tastes like meat.
And all right. So for all listeners out there, here's another question. Why would you want to do that? Because we get lots of meat now, right? This is a common question I get.
I think, first of all, we love animals. We don't want them to suffer through the process. Okay. And then the second is that the current animal farming today is very harmful to the nature. So we just would like to bring some sustainable technologies to reduce that harm and then give some longer run rate to our earth.
Right. I think that although the exact number is somewhat in dispute, I think between 15 and 40% of the greenhouse gas emissions by people annually is supposed to be related to the growing of meat. Exactly. It's very high impact. It's also a concern for the diet, isn't it, for people?
Yeah, and people eat more and more protein. So at least we are giving this alternative where you don't really need to take more space on Earth to grow cattle. You can now just do it in a smaller space.
Right. So the vision is you're going to have this plant and just meat's just going to come out of it. Is that about right?
Exactly.
Just like a beer brewing. When you go to a brewery at the core of your house to have a little beer, it's made locally inside a building. It's going to be the same type of process.
We actually, in the previous, in an earlier episode of the series, we had Will Clem, who was the founder, co-founder of one of the first lab-grown meat or cultivated meat companies. And now you guys are sort of like the avant-garde of the second wave of companies, but you're not alone. Like there are, I just want everybody to know, this is kind of, in certain circles, kind of a big deal. There's probably about 90 cultivated or lab-grown meat companies in the world now. Startups have taken, was it $500 million in investments this last year?
Exactly.
And we are expecting to see products on the market very soon. And a lot of people haven't heard about it, but it's quite the movement, and it's been in Forbes and on CNN, and all this idea is sort of getting around. It's been amazing. Okay, but so now let's get back to the founder journey here. You guys want to tell me, how is it that you got involved in this crazy idea?
I mean, personally, I was working on bioprocessing for developing drugs. And I thought bioprocessing can solve a lot of different variety of problems that we have in the world. And then the drug manufacturing is already well established. So I said, okay, you know, what's the next? Okay. And then food security came up the strongest that we can resolve that.
And so what is bioprocessing? Tell us a little bit about that.
So bioprocessing is using the biological technologies to produce products, such as drugs. You can use cells to produce drugs for you, mm-hmm. like biologics, especially mm-hmm. antibodies and such. And then you use biological processes in the way.
Sure, like our vaccines.
Like our vaccines today have been correct.
Right, and drugs like cancer treatments and things like that. Right.
We take the cells and then put them into a container called a bioreactor. It is a physical environment that mimics the environment within the original animal they are taking out. So then that helps us to make those cells as happy as possible and then grow inside that vessel and then take them out. You can use them as a drug, or you can use them as whatever variety reason.
You put the cells in and meat comes out.
Exactly.
Right. But the bioprocessing is a way of sort of like getting the precise material out in the form that you want.
I think Sam is being humble because it takes many, many, many years of school to try to understand this stuff.
It is. It's a great career because it's very high demand now as well. Turning the mush inside a tank into a product is not a mean feat. It's a pretty skilled thing. All right. And Gabriel, where did you come from? Like, how did you get into this?
So I think I was always mission oriented. Every job I took was always mission oriented. I actually was working in one of the very few large nonprofit on Wall Street in New York City. Just to tell you, I really wanted
to. Do you ever eat lunch alone?
Never. Pre-COVID, yes. Never happened, but I'm sure after I probably ate.
That's still a rare thing, rare card to hang out on Wall Street. Like, I'm working with a nonprofit.
Exactly. It was a nonprofit that was very profitable. How about that? They understood how to do this. But I think I got to a point where I was very comfortable. I had built a small team. We had, I think, triple our assets at the time. So our revenue went from like 2 million to about 10 million. And I was very comfortable. I started the startup with Samit and Patricia, which is our other co-founder, who's not there today in the podcast. And I think it's just the mission was really what I wanted. I was seeking to have a larger mission, something that would make an impact.
Right. Well, I think that's something that a lot of people in the space share. But it's incredible, right? Because the scope of meat is just incredible. Like how much meat? I don't think people know how much meat in North America is sold.
I mean, this is trillions of dollars around the world.
So I think it's in multiple market, trillions in the world.
Extremely large market.
I think together with the seafood is around $2 trillion. Meat itself is also very close.
I think it's 700 billion in North America alone. So per year. Yeah. So it's, we all go and, you know, you can all get a hamburger from Five Guys, but I don't think you think about like how many other people are also getting hamburgers at that moment. And there's just a tremendous amount of beef being moved. So that's the global, that's amazing amount of impact that we have. I co-founded a dog food company and we used to call Wild Earth. And we sold a lot of, when we were investing, looking for investors, we would just tell people, look, if you just take the dogs and cats in North America, they are the fifth largest country in the world for meat consumption.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's how much meat that we sell, we eat, everybody. That's the leftovers alone are like Korea. So, so what was it like though? I mean, one of the things I'm always fascinated about is you have this mindset change. Like at first, it's just like the three of you having coffee, right? And you're just talking, wow, we could put together a presentation. And then you blink your eyes and like you're opening your first office and you've got this bank account that's, you know, got what you think is a lot of money from some investors. And what was that like for you? You want to talk about, that was a crazy time.
Actually, exactly what you said happened. I mean, I had a lunch with Patricia to come up with an idea about, you know, let's build a startup. And then after it followed with the coffee, of course, and a very long coffee, like I think 5 shots or something like that. It is not an easy decision for anybody.
Hard. I think it's harder for you and you both more than most people who are on the show because you guys had good jobs. You're well established. I mean, the amazing thing about one of the things that sets a brilliant apart is for the field, you're all very much veterans of the industry. You've had years and years of experience. You really have a deep technical sort of background and you're leaving comfortable positions to basically start something. You're starting with a company that's value is zero. Like that's a big transition at your point, right? So how did that feel to you guys?
I mean, I think it's a question of risk. Actually, Sam and I did a survey about our characters, and we answered answers. And in the percentage of high risk, we were on the maximum. So we are people who love to take risk. I think this is a risk in our career.
Not healthy, but yeah.
Not necessarily healthy, you know, for yourself. But I mean, I think it was a great risk. I was comfortable. I was in my dream job. I think Sam was in his dream job. We moved. And we made this decision together. We really believe on ourselves. We raised this money. It started with a dream, but I really honestly think that who we are and the reputation we had and the knowledge we've learned was helpful for others to believe in us as well. So we have built that character already. So I think I like to remember people that, you know, all of the things you've done in the past will help you raise money today because you're more believable. I went to school, up to a postdoc at UC Berkeley, mm-hmm. and Sam went to the best bioprocessing school in the world. I mean, we didn't just end up here. We actually had the confidence that we can do this, and people had confidence in us too.
I would like to put this way. So going into corporate was more painful for me to going into a startup because I was always dreaming for a startup. So I came to the United States to really build a startup in a right way, like in a more scientific, in startup world. So the corporate world for me was a step. As you mentioned.
It's harder to leave that. It's harder to sort of leave your first step when the second step is dropping some of your salary, you've got a mortgage.
The problem that I had was I stayed too long in the corporate. So then you became a corporate person. And then stepping outside is not easy.
It is not. There's a golden handcuffs, that they say.
But there's something so refreshing about it. I tell you something. Samit and I work together, but we still call each other several times a day, text each other. We appreciate each other. Same with our other co-founder, Patricia. And I think that with any of those large jobs and big organization, there's a lot of politics going on. It's very usually top to bottom. Mm-hmm. So, right, the CEO and the leadership team, they come up with idea, and then it comes to the other person, the manager of the manager of the manager. And then these people lack context when they make their idea. And it's normal. It goes with any large organization. But I think we have the opportunity here to create a company also for the people and for ourselves that reflects our value, which would not necessarily be so tough.
That is amazing. I think, you know, I really resonate with what you guys are saying, because I'm like you guys. First of all, on a risk survey, I rank very high. I'm like, I'm just like, oh my God, is there a dime down there in the toilet? Like I will, you know, I'm like, I'll do it, you know? And so I came out here looking for startups in the Bay Area in 2000. And like, I did the same thing, like 12 years later, I'm a team lead and I've got all these people under me and I've got this mortgage and I've actually got a couple kids. And I'm like, you know, it's like time to quit my job. You know, that's not normal. But I think really great entrepreneurs, I mean, that's why one of the reasons I love working with your team and you guys is that, you know, I can tell you're driven by something that's not just like comfort, you know, or security. And I just find that really invigorating. And I think it's a very common trait for entrepreneurs. And it's one of the reasons I love working with them.
Can I add one thing over there?
Oh, yeah.
So I totally agree with what you said. You need to find the comfort in an uncomfortable situation. Mm-hmm. I was running an innovation program in a corporate company, which was gigantic. And then I had a very big budget. And then one of the problems that I had was the big budget. So it wasn't creating enough uncomfortable environment for people to come up with a breakthrough innovation. So that's why startups are very important. And if you're an innovative mindset, if you have that, so the best place is going to startup. Go with your dream.
I love that. I often think that myself, that like, actually, you're not, when you do a startup, you're not actually looking for money. You're looking for poverty.
Exactly.
Because it just makes you do something you'd never otherwise do. But what's really amazing that we have people that actually chase after that and want it. That's the part I'm not sure I can explain to everybody. Okay, I'm going to make time for a little break. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably, and maybe get your startup going. So we're going to take the second half of the interview now and talk about like what it's like to, so you guys got the money and you have to get started. And then some things happened. Like I remember Patricia's like, oh, we found our money and we have an oversubscribed round. Let's look at labs in San Francisco Bay Area here. That's not what happened. So who wants to talk about that?
I mean, the location is a very interesting story because there's a lot of the personal issues that comes to mind, as well as the monetary and space availability. But in our case, I think that one of the lab that we have in Los Angeles is partly because I was relocating from New York City to the West Coast. And I have a partner who works in fashion, obviously fashion in San Francisco. I don't know if it exists yet, but it's
there
coming.
There is no fashion in San Francisco. Kind of like the rock music, the popular music scene, you know, we have Journey and that was like the last thing. So
exactly. So it was a hybrid, right? It was like, okay, I need to come with my partner. We need to establish ourselves somewhere. Mm-hmm. And LA is a great area. Also, LA has a university in which we had a collaboration. So to be honest, there was this drive to be closer to that collaboration as well. I mean, LA is a hugely vibrant incubator space, really. And there's a lot of little pockets, but it's such a large region that if you don't work, like people who work in the movie industry, they all work at Hollywood, right? But in LA, if you work in tech, you could be literally 3-hour traffic away from
that's right, which could be just 10 miles.
Yes.
But, you know, so let's talk about LA, because, you know, people talk about the Bay Area all the time. Actually, one of the things I love about working with all the startups across iAccelerate is that like it's geographically distributed. Like out of the 14, 15 companies I have, we're currently working with, there's only two of them in the Bay Area. And that's, I'm kind of counting you, but you're actually only half here, right? So, I mean, what is LA like? Like, you know, I mean, is it a good place to start a startup? And, you know, what kind of resources are you seeing there?
It comes with great things and comes with challenge, right? I can tell you a little bit about both. But like I told you, I think that, you know, I was in an interview last week and someone decided not to, you know, they were interested in our company. We were interested in them too, but it's very challenging for them to commute to the area we are in LA. So LA is geographically challenged within the city. But LA is extremely welcoming, meaning that when you come in, I made so many friends within literally a week. And I felt that also you're away from each other geographically, but you're so much more welcoming when you meet someone that is from your, you know, tech industry versus in San Francisco, for example, where I lived for many years. Everyone is a tech.
You can't even get an eyebrows raised. I'm like, I'm an engineer at Google. Nothing.
LA also brings a lot of, you know, economical advantages as well. If you look at that perspective, I mean, it's not far away from Silicon Valley. It is reachable for any company. It is cheaper, relatively. A lot cheaper, especially for the lab space. More availability compared to here. And then great talents. I mean, for a startup like us, I think it was a very good choice to go down to LA and then find the great talents there.
That's great. And so let's talk about expansion. So how large is the company now? Let's see, you funded in January, February. It's November now, and people will be hearing this in December. So, you know, 9 months. So how long? So
yeah, 9 months. I think at this moment, we are reaching to 9 people.
Wow.
I think 9 months ago, we were only 4 or 5. So it is very fast. And then we are growing further. So we have opened 7 positions as well. Oh,
so what kind of people are you looking for?
I think it's important here. It's like, this is the decision that we made, Samet, myself, and Patricia, is that we really want to hire people with a lot of talent and people with lots of experience in the topic that we're working on. So we are hiring the best of the best. And we did this by design, meaning that we want people who will challenge us. And we all have a very, you know, something that's very different from our company compared to many other companies in the field is that we all have a very high level of education in the area that we're talking about, right? So I have many years in synthetic biology, like I told you, 7 in bioprocessing. But think about it. The more education you have, the more you recognize that you don't know anything about that specific topic you're working on. So we hire these people to cover for this area.
Yeah.
And I recognize that I don't know it, they know it. So we are run very equally in our culture, meaning that people have high education, high knowledge of what they're doing. So they have an equal voice to ours in our daily activity.
So that's interesting. So let me stop you right there. So what you're saying is, you know, you need really, really high-skilled, very focused people with a tremendous amount of experience and knowledge in their particular fields. You're going to be working with them, but you don't really necessarily know because the company is expanding its scope. So you need people in fields that you're not familiar with. And then you got this culture thing. Like, how is that related, right? How, you know, everybody wants employees better than they deserve for lower pay than they can afford. So like, but there is an attraction there. So how does that work with Urbillion?
I mean, I think what I describe ourselves as founders is really like, we are the enablers. We bring the best talent available, and then we just allow them to bring our vision into a reality, and then we just ask them what you need. Okay. And then our job is to make sure that their needs are fulfilled, and then they can go above and beyond in within their roles.
So this is a really critical one. This is one of my favorite questions. As companies go beyond that seed round where they may take in $2 or $4 or $6 million, I've actually sat through 100 of these deals now. After that, that's when the challenges start, folks. You know, what we're talking about is something called culture, which is one of the favorite things. I love to talk about this with the teams because it's something that we often forget. Things are happening. You're starting to hire people. You're signing leases. People are inviting you to talk and telling you you're really wonderful, which is like the worst thing that happened to you in the world. And so people often forget what it's like to work at the company, that it has a personality, right? And so you guys are like wandering into a very big topic. It's really important. So how is it that you're creating, let's go into the details. How are you digging into this environment? How are you creating this place where these people would come in? Because they'll have options, right? That's the only kind of person you want, is someone who could go do something else.
Well, I mean, you know, if you want to work in an environment where you have equal voice, this is definitely one of them. But if you bring the best talent, right? Talent want to hang out with talent. I mean, one of the most motivating thing you can have is to give your heart to work and have someone else next to you who's at equal position within your organization, who is literally not leveraging or giving as much support as you do, right? So we feel the same. We hire the best of the best because they will hang out with the best of the best. And a small team of extremely performant people at work can equal an army.
Right.
They make major leap of innovation. And we've seen it already in our company within the last 6 months.
People again, really reaching their potential as an attractive feature.
Yes. And this was probably easier for our startup. The only reason why is that Sam and I, for example, had a lot of experience building a team before. So we knew that. So that's an advantage, I would say, that we had. Mm-hmm. But I'm wishing it to anybody who starts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, I can only second that. I think the fuel for the talent is the other talent. So you just need to bring them into close proximity and then give them a very good vision and then, you know, mm-hmm. just feed their, you know, desire in a way that, okay, we are going to come up with something breakthrough.
This guy, because you guys are, I'm going to slow down here a little bit and focus on a couple of things because you're saying some things that are actually very unobvious to a lot of people. And I know this, I have, you know, being in the startup world, what you see over and over is what they call sort of like the startup bro kind of culture, which is sort of like, we know what's going on. We're the elite team. Management's going to push all these things out and we're just kind of control this. It's a very top down sort of thing. I hear so many people, including very expensive advisors, say that like, well, the CEO's there to basically make things happen. And so they need arbitrary control over everybody. They prefer a top-down, highly controlled situation. And for me as a startup, I don't really know, you know, how where that comes from, but you guys are quite a different example. How does that work with you guys? How do you see that?
Ron, I think that, again, I go back to this experience. I think when we start, nobody wants to be managed.
Nobody.
If you're demotivated, you have to be managed because you're demotivated and you're not working at mm-hmm. your full potential because it might not be the job for mm-hmm. you. But when you hire people that have a lot of talent and experience or lots of drive, for example, you don't have to manage them. You have to mm-hmm. enable them. So I would say that key words, but you really just enable them. That's the beauty of it. Now, it works at the size of organization that we are at. Well, it works forever. It is possible that we have satellite little organization within an organization. That's fine too. But right now, at the size that we have, this is mm-hmm. the perfect sweet spot. Don't That's manage. Beautiful. Enable people. Hire the best.
And both Gabriel and I have many years of experience that the top-down approaches always fail. I mean, bottom-up approach I think failed
they,
as well.
They exist a lot.
They actually. Exist a lot. But you know,
but the nobody end, the run, likes them.
Yeah,
it's kind of like Labor Day.
failure can be described in a way that you can lose your people. It doesn't mean that the company is going to fail. Don't get me wrong. But you know, at the end, if you would like to get the most efficient engine, this needs to be, you know, self-sufficient and then feed itself, and then comes from bottom up, and then that's what we are trying to build in Norbillion.
That's great. So, well, I mean, for those of us who are trying to start our own little thing and want to think about what's next or have a cultural sort of like problem, like. What? Give us some tips. How do you create this environment where people reach their full potential? One tip.
I always think about a chicken, and that's
I
there.
Think about chickens too.
It's
sometimes.
Not so bad. It's not so bad for a big company.
Yeah,
but
okay.
you know, you really protect your egg, right?
Mm-hmm.
You protect your egg so that the egg will, you know, eventually the baby will, the little chick will come out of the eggs and it will be kept warm and, you know, but does the chicken tells the egg come out and that's how you come out? No. You just protect them. You put the people who work for your company, work for you, for themselves because you're a startup. So you're part of the story. And then you just give them anything they need around themselves. And that includes also support at the personal level, as well as support at work with
supporting people.
Physical things, materials, mm-hmm. and other.
So the top down is thinking about the environment and
create a comfortable and safe environment and mm-hmm. stable environment for your people. And mm-hmm. then make sure that they need what they have what they need.
I mean, people here haven't met Patricia yet, although if you go on the web, you'll see her all over the place because people like to talk to Patricia, the third co-founder, but the three of you are a really great team. You guys get along together really well, right?
Exactly.
And that sort of diffuses out. I mean, I think that shows to everybody how that works.
Yeah, and we are human. We have conflicts sometimes, but you know, we have a role in the company. If mm-hmm. we have a conflict and you didn't call your co-founder 10, 15 minutes, maybe one day to resolve it, then you have an issue, like a real issue. Hmm. So we do not do that. We just call immediately each other. We tell each other in a nice way. And to be honest, over phone is so much better than via email. We just have this great communication with each other in person.
That's a good goal.
We don't hesitate. It's a priority. Priority is for us to be.
Because I see a lot of co-founder situations where people aren't really enjoying each other. And I think the three of you do. You know, it's great having dinner with you guys. I think it's a great rule. Just don't go to bed angry kind of thing. I mean, people do that when they're married to someone, but doing it for work means a lot to a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. And great advisor too.
Exactly.
Ron, you're one of our advisors.
We have to say that. Yes.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I've been great advisor all the time, all along the way. It's super important. Ron is, you know, people probably don't know in this podcast, but you're one of our official advisor. You've been there since the start. You really helped
in the
us
journey.
Grow.
Exactly.
That's important. You ask questions, you have people, you have your mentors. An advisor is a mentor.
Oh, really. Thanks. No, I appreciate it. I really love working with you guys. Your team is really cohesive in a way, and it's really, it makes a huge difference to the company.
I think the realization of why the conflict is happening is very important. It is the reason that we all have passion about this vision, right? So everybody wants something good coming out, and everybody has an opinion about it. But you know, as Gabriel mentioned, it is very important among co-founders to build that mechanism of
right
how to overcome that, and then, you know, how big
right.
they can.
Because I think the much more common way of dealing with a conflict or a disagreement is to ignore it and just let it snowball
and
into this horrible thing,
yeah.
And then you've got to force somebody to get out. I think that's often what happens, you know. And I got to say that, like, actually, if you study a little bit about corporate culture as a company starts very small and gets bigger, what you see is that, like, or what I see is the personality conflicts and their general personality and the way that they treat each other amongst the co-founders, it becomes the mood in the company. Like, it's astounding how quickly everybody picks up on it and they all just sort of follow it, you know? And you can't almost control it. Like, you can come in every day and say, like, we are a happy company. And you're like, you can have an all hands and just sort of talk about it. But people kind of still know what's really going on, don't they?
Yes. Yes, they do. And I think, I mean, we're lucky because Sam and I also had a co-founder, Patricia, which, like you say, is very well known all over the media. But she really early on, she brought up this concept of, like, making sure we invest on the three of us. That's something I really admire from her. She brought this in this team, and I think we just followed this rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. But I think co-founder problem is probably, yeah, from what we know and what we hear from our friends and colleagues and former colleagues,
yeah,
it's, you know, one of the most common failure for a company is when co-founders don't hang out. Because if you know, if the people who found the company don't hang out and don't spend time together and don't make a point to go for dinner, which is all those time when you resolve
that's
problems.
When you get through
you resolve
things.
Problems, you know, by investing in each other, not by mm-hmm. running away from each other. So I think that's the best.
Yeah.
Make amazing. Sure to hang out with your...
Yeah, I think founders should make sure that they have a good time invested among each other to really, like, spend time together and then talk. That's the most important thing. I mean, when Gabriel says it sounds like, yeah, no, it's just a dinner. No, it's very important. The most of the conflict.
How often do you guys physically get together?
I fly to San Francisco every week. Sam and Patricia fly to LA almost every 2 weeks, and sometimes alternate. And then we go for a trip together.
That's amazing.
This is probably the best investment we've ever made.
That's great. I think there's I'm an amateur psychologist, which is one of the reasons I enjoy what I'm doing. Like, I work with the teams because I'm also interested in their personalities and how the culture is forming and all this. And I find it amazing, but, you know, humans are really, they're animals, and there's no telephones in evolution. There's no iPads. And I think that you really need to see somebody almost every day. Otherwise, they start to seem more distant and mysterious and shady, even if you know them really well. You know, I think married couples have the same problem. You know, families have the same issues. But companies, you have to work together. Like, there's going to be another quarterly meeting, and it just shows up immediately, I think.
That's a very good example. And I also want to say that build a good experimental design. Mm-hmm. What communication method works best? I think we tried all of what you said, like tablets. Like,
so you scienced your culture.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
We have a period of trial of any method to communicate each other. If it doesn't work, just kill it. It is what it is. So, and then figure out what is the best. And then we realize that it is always like a face-to-face communication.
Yeah. I don't think it's interesting you found that you can't replace that at all.
No, not at all.
Thanks for sharing that result.
Yeah, and one other tip that we do is every few months, I think every 3 months, with everyone on the team, we review all the meetings that we have. And if those meetings are not necessary for the next 3 months, we just cut them right there. So we evolve our communication in many different ways. Also internally with everyone, we literally, everyone has a voice. Okay, do we need this? No, bye. We need this one. We need a new one. Okay, let's do it.
You know, I think it's incredible that, like, I think it's really important to notice that, like, you know, you guys are trying to make meat out of cells and, you know, and reduce the price by 100-fold and all these other things that are sort of ahead of you. But I think still it's really important to talk about how you get along, because if you don't get along, all of the other things aren't going to happen. I think that's why it's always on the bottom line there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And encourage the idea, right? You don't want people to start hiding the best idea because they feel afraid to say it. I mean, you need to be encouraged for that.
That's true, because you need to innovate at a very high rate, right? You need to bring in these innovations super fast. You don't have a lot of time. And making people feel free to speak, that's an amazing point.
Yeah, and that respect, money is not necessarily the limit, time is. We need to be the first with a product, and we know that. And that's, you know, we're very product oriented. That's the way
okay.
It works.
So what do you guys? What can you talk about? What your product plans are? Like, what's for the future for Billion? When will people see you guys in the news?
We are expecting to launch our very first product sometime in end of 2022 and the beginning of 2023.
Wow,
it's a fast.
It's very fast.
Very fast.
So watch the grocery store aisle.
So that's why we need talents to join us. I'll just bring us back to the question you had, what positions we are hiring.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Tell us, what do you need?
Our needs are bioprocess engineers and scientists, okay, as well as cell scientists, cell biology scientists, and then food scientists. We are welcoming all the resumes at this moment. Please reach us if you're interested.
The website's on the URL is on the podcast there, I think.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah. And you are part of the solution. So join our team. Just coming out and be with performance.
Come to LA and have a great time and be heard.
This is what we offer.
That's not a bad deal. Think about what it's like at work for you, and you might want to give these guys a call. All right, well, once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle was sponsored by Fullscale, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Find them on Instagram at Startup Hustle Podcast or check out the YouTube channel. All of these URLs, you can get hold of any of us in the podcast description. And I want to thank you guys for inviting me into your headquarters and Startup Hustle as well. And I'm sure we'll all look for you guys in the news.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Ron. This was amazing.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.